All right. Welcome, everyone, to the Instructional Leadership Show. I'm your host, Justin Bader, and this is episode 62, which is part three of our ongoing series that we're calling The Continuity Project. And I am your host, Justin Bader. Leave a comment if you are tuning in live. Let me know that you are here. And today we are going to be talking about metaphor and how we can use metaphor to guide people through the kind of ambiguity and the confusion and the uncertainty that can come from the major changes that are going to be in place as we reopen schools. So in the Continuity Project, we have a couple of priorities. First of all, we're trying to address three types of challenges that schools everywhere will face. There are the practical challenges of how we get the work done, how we perhaps meet together when we're not able to be in the same room. Maybe we can't have our leadership team meeting in the library like we used to. You know, there's going to be some pragmatics that are different. On a cultural level, you know, that has implications for how we see ourselves as a collective and as a group and the identity that we have as a staff. And we've got to get ahead of that so that we're purposeful in building that school culture. And then third, on a relational level, how can we maintain strong relationships when we're physically separated? And that's one we're going to especially touch on today as we talk about metaphor. And of course, throughout the Continuity Project, we're addressing two kinds of change, not just the technical changes of, you know, how do we space out the desks and things like that, but also the adaptive challenges of becoming different people and really, you know, seeing ourselves in a new light and requiring new things of ourselves in order to do what needs to be done. So again, leave a comment if you are tuning in. Let me know that you are here, and I will attempt to keep an eye on those. And if I don't get back to you while we're live, I will follow up with you later. But this is part of an ongoing series, again, that we call The Continuity Project. Thank you so much for being here. Last week, we talked about rituals and how we need to develop new rituals for things like greeting one another, for being in a staff meeting together, for celebrating you know, different staff members, for onboarding new staff members who are hired. You know, there are so many different procedures that are going to be different, but they're not just procedures. They're imbued with meaning. And that's why we talked in session two about ritual. Now, if you have not seen session two, I want to invite you to get into that. You can go to principalcenter.com/continuity and log in at the link that you'll see there. And you can actually watch the replay of session two where we talk about ritual. Today, we are moving on to metaphor. And our essential question is this: how can we use metaphors to help people in our school communities comprehend and make sense of change, right? This is confusing stuff. This is disorienting stuff. When we talk about maybe students coming back in shifts, maybe we have morning students and afternoon students, or A day students and B day students, or, you know, some sort of alternating pattern may be part of your plan. Let me know if that is part of your plan. I'd love to hear what you are planning for and being asked to prepare for. But all of these shifts are confusing. They are unprecedented, and we're all sick of the word unprecedented by now, right? But the reality is that they are unprecedented. And when we don't have any prior experience with a situation, how do we reason about it? Well, we reason metaphorically. We think in terms of analogies to previous situations, and we say, okay, well, what is this like? I've never seen that animal before, but it's growling at me, and other animals have growled at me, so I think I'm probably in danger, right? This is kind of hardwired into us to think in terms of metaphor. But sometimes the metaphors are not good, right? Sometimes we need to have a more effective metaphor rather than one that maybe triggers our fear or our avoidance or our anxiety. But really, what's happening here when we're using this metaphorical reasoning is we're recognizing a situation and we're saying, okay, well, this is like that other situation that I was in one time, so here's what I should do. And we decide how to act based on that metaphor. And once you start thinking this way, you will see opportunities to improve our metaphors everywhere. One big one that I kind of came up with in many, many discussions with people about wearing masks. We've had a terrible time getting people to wear masks in our community because I think it's been kind of politicized, and there's just a lot of, well, I'm not afraid. You know, you can wear one if you're afraid, but that's not me. I'm healthy and I'm not worried. And there is a lot of just kind of unawareness of the, you know, the emerging research that says, no, this is really about keeping other people safe. You know, you might be asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic, and this is about keeping other people safe. And I realized what was happening was that people were reasoning from a different metaphor than I was. They were thinking, okay, a mask brings up this kind of scenario. A mask brings up the scenario of somebody being in a quarantine or an isolation ward, right? Somebody has Ebola and they're, you know, the only doctors who can see them are in the hazmat suits and they bleach everything on their way out. And it's just this horrible kind of fear-based, you know, extremely dire situation. And understandably, people don't want to be in that frame of mind when they go shopping. So they don't like wearing masks if that's their metaphor. And of course, we are probably experiencing, let me know if you're experiencing pushback from people already. If parents are contacting you saying, I don't care what you say, my kid's not wearing a mask when I come back to school. Well, you know, there is that fear-based kind of framework or frame of reference that tells people what behaviors are appropriate in a given situation. And that can lead to a lot of resistance around things like, hey, everybody has to wear a mask when we come back. So this, again, was something that people were specifically saying in our community. And what I realized was that we needed a different metaphor. We need to get out of that kind of isolation ward mentality. So I said to one of our friends locally who was kind of giving me a hard time about this, I said, you know what? It's really not like wearing a seatbelt, right? You're talking about this like you're wearing a seatbelt, or you're saying, I can wear a seatbelt if I feel the need to, but I shouldn't tell you that you have to wear a seatbelt because it doesn't really affect you, right? And that's kind of how seatbelts work. Like, they protect you. They don't really protect other people very much. It's really about protecting yourself. So if you don't wear a seatbelt and you get into a car accident, whatever happens is on you. And I had to, you know, kind of put that out there and say, you know what, but that's not really what this is like. This is more like stopping at a four-way stop, right? Stopping at a four-way stop is not something that I do because I'm a fearful person and I fear for my life and I'm just timid and afraid and I do everything out of this kind of reactionary fear. No, that's not why we stop at stop signs, is it? Right? We stop at stop signs because it's a social contract that only works if we all do it, no matter how we feel about it. Right? We have to stop at four-way stops regardless of how confident we're feeling that morning. Like, if you wake up in the morning feeling great, on top of the world, invincible, you're still gonna stop at a four-way stop, right? Because it only works if we all do it. So whenever we encounter some sort of confusion or misconception or resistance among our staff, among our students, you know, if you have older students are going to have different probably issues and challenges with coming back than younger students. But if you have some sort of confusion or resistance that you're encountering, I want to encourage you to think in terms of metaphor. So redefining that metaphor, you know, going from, say, you know, saying, hey, I think you're thinking about this like a seatbelt that you can wear if you want to. I want you to see this as a four-way stop, where this only works if we all do it. And sometimes a slogan can go a long way in helping people remember that metaphor. I love the slogan, my mask protects you, your mask protects me, because it directly contradicts that misconception that you only should wear a mask if you're a sick person, right? That's kind of the misconception that we're trying to combat here. Another one that people need help with is, you know, this one's a little awkward sometimes, handshakes, right? The good old fashioned handshake, you know, it was very, very normal to shake someone's hand in a lot of different settings. You know, maybe you shake hands at church or in a community meeting. Maybe that's just your normal way of greeting certain people. And it's been difficult, especially if you were kind of, you know, getting the sense that, you know, that this pandemic was on its way. Maybe it wasn't really active in your community yet, but you started to think to yourself, you know what, I think I'm just going to stop shaking hands. I might be the first one to stop that. And that's going to be a little bit awkward. That leaves us with this feeling of awkwardness that I think we've really got to tackle head on as we approach the new school year and as we approach bringing our staff back. And the cultural kind of baggage and the cultural kind of implications of things like this are often why we struggle, right? There is a history that goes back thousands of years with handshakes, right? And there are different kind of, kind of legends about how handshakes developed. I think probably it was something along the lines of, making sure the other person didn't have a dagger up their sleeves. And there's some debate among historians about whether that was really true. But, you shake someone's hand and it's a sign of trust. Well, if I no longer shake someone's hand, is that a sign of distrust? Well, by default, yes. If we do not have an alternate story to give people and an alternate explanation to help people comprehend and make sense of a little thing like handshakes, we're going to start the day, we're going to start the school year with distrust. We're going to start it with suspicion and hurt feelings. So we've already seen things like an elbow bump. It could be as simple as a replacement ritual. By the way, last week we talked about rituals for doing the things that need to be done. So often the metaphor lends itself to a different ritual. But the metaphor also helps us with just the comprehension and just understanding what's going on. This person is refusing to shake my hands. Did I do something wrong? Is this person a jerk? What's going on here? Well, we've got to help people comprehend that people's intentions can be good even if their behavior is different. And I think the more deliberate and the more explicit we are in just stating that outright, the better off we are going to be. And the way that you know when you need to come up with a new metaphor is when you find people either feeling or thinking or acting in unhelpful ways. If there's some sort of awkwardness or anxiety or guilt or mistrust or some sort of bad feeling, probably the root cause of that is the wrong metaphor, the wrong kind of base metaphor for comprehending the situation, right? Like if I'm a person who is, being kind of standoffish, if you're introduced to me, we meet each other, and I just kind of lean back and cross my arms and kind of scowl at you, well, you have existing kind of paradigms for interpreting that reaction on my part, right? If I'm suspicious and I kind of scowl at you, you know that you can infer with a pretty good degree of accuracy that I am probably not super happy to be meeting you. But if the metaphor has been deliberately shifted so that simply my lack of, eagerness to shake your hand is replaced with a different ritual. If we all approach this with a common understanding that we have got to develop new rituals to deal with the new situation, then we're going to be a lot more successful in bringing our staff back together, welcoming our students back, welcoming our families back, even if a lot of what we used to do in that process is not currently possible. So a couple of guidelines for identifying areas where you might need to help people come up with new metaphors, or where a metaphor could be the key to unlocking someone's understanding. If you're getting resistance, if you're getting kind of pushback and arguments from people, why do we have to do this? Why do we have to do that? Well, think about what their baseline metaphor is. Okay, so if they need to do something different, maybe you have a new sick leave policy. Maybe you have a new schedule for students. Maybe you have a new procedure for walking through the office. I know, Heather, we were talking about the mailboxes have to be one way and you can't stop and linger and chat with other people there. It has to be really one person at a time at the mailboxes, things like that. Anytime you're getting just confusion and pushback and a lot of emotion around any of those changes, a metaphor can really be the key to unlocking that. And if there is any kind of guilt or anxiety or hurt feelings or damaged relationships that you're starting to pick up on, start with a better metaphor. So we're going to make this applicable. We're going to take some time in just a moment to apply this to your situation. But I wanted to give you a couple of examples here, just in terms of some places where people might need help reframing their thinking. The first is around virtual instruction. And we got a little bit lucky this past year when we went to virtual instruction. We were lucky in the sense that our students already knew us. We already knew our students. We had already started the year. And those relationships were already in place to get us through the end of the year, right? And I know virtual instruction was probably not all that successful everywhere, but we had the advantage of already knowing our students. When we start back, I'm hearing from a lot of people that there needs to be at least a plan in place. Maybe we won't have to use that plan, but we need to at least be prepared for the possibility of starting the year virtually or starting the year in a staggered way where you have half of your students virtually one day and the other half in person, and then you flip-flop. So if our metaphor has been that, you know, if our frame of reference has been that my students are in the room with me or I'm not their teacher, like, you know, that's going to have to change, right? We are going to have to start to think about our students as learners when they're not in the room in front of us. And if you can think of a metaphor or an analogy or some sort of way of making that sink in terms of the understanding and the emotion around it, you're going to go much farther in helping people deal with that change. So leave a comment if you can think of a metaphor for helping people work through that shift to virtual or hybrid instruction. Okay, another one. Self-quarantine. You know, if you've been possibly exposed to the coronavirus, you might have to kind of self-quarantine for a given period of time and stay home. And this goes directly against our norms in our profession of, you know, showing up. If you can possibly drag yourself through the school day, you better be here because you're going to let everybody down if you have to be absent and get a sub and the kids aren't going to learn as much and it's going to be more work for everybody else and it's going to cost the school money. Well, we have so much inherited expectation around that issue that it's difficult for people to understand. I need to stay home even if I feel like I could get through the day. If I have symptoms, it's not okay for me to just power through them. I need to maybe go get tested and maybe need to self-isolate. That is going to be a difficult shift for people to make. And it may be that we need to use a metaphor to help people comprehend that. Now, if you're watching this in the Continuity Project, this would be a great place to use the timestamped comments feature to leave an example of a metaphor that could help people understand this particular issue. Okay, we'll go on to a couple more examples here. What if someone is complaining about the sanitizing procedures or the social distancing procedures and they just say, well, this is terrible, this is annoying, I hate this, everybody's gonna hate it, the school year is gonna be terrible. What would be a metaphor that you could use to reframe that person's kind of bad attitude about what we've all got to do to get through this time? Leave a comment and let me know. So the metaphor is kind of where we start our thinking. And in the previous session, again, we talked quite a bit about rituals last week. If you're not sure what to start with in terms of a ritual, you might need to begin a step further back and help people understand the situation and therefore understand what they need to do by starting with metaphor. So again, if you didn't watch last week's session, we talked about kind of replacing behaviors that fit our current circumstances, getting people comfortable with those so that we can reduce people's anxiety and get those new procedures reinforced, make people comfortable, rebuild relationships. And we talked through a number of different questions around those. So again, if you've not seen that yet, go ahead into the Continuity Project dashboard in SIBME, watch that training, and leave comments using the video timestamp feature. And to kind of wrap things up today, I would like to ask you to do a little bit of reflection. Based on what you've heard so far from your staff, from your parent community, maybe from students, where are you detecting points of confusion, points of guilt, you know, again, like people staying home when they're not that sick, but they are sick? Or where are you detecting anxiety? What do people have confusion, guilt, or anxiety about? And then step two, what metaphors could help people make sense of those realities and get through them and have a guide in their thinking to different action because you've given them that metaphor. So this is a little bit abstract. I am here to help support you through that. So if you have questions, if you're not sure how to make the leap from, okay, I've got this point, this thing people are confused about, or this thing that people just will not get on board with, and you need help with the metaphor, let's talk about it. I would love to brainstorm with you, and other people in the Continuity Project would love to help you brainstorm the metaphor that can help you help your staff make sense of the situations that we're currently dealing with. If you've not signed in yet, you can do that at principalcenter.com/continuity. And I want to thank SIBME for giving us access to their platform where we're hosting all of these videos, we're hosting all of these discussions and all of these resources. So if you haven't signed in yet, you can go to principalcenter.com/continuity. It's totally free. It will continue to be free throughout the duration of the project. We want to support everyone in our profession in figuring all of this out. And one of the first things that we've figured out collectively is around virtual faculty meetings. So something that you'll find in SIBME, you can download a PDF, and we also have a discussion board on this, is around virtual faculty meetings. How do we have a faculty meeting when we can't meet in person? You probably have had to do that to some extent. You've probably had some lessons learned. And what we've done is we've aggregated and compiled all of those lessons learned from our members so that you can review those and maybe make some tweaks to your faculty meeting plans for the coming year. And you can download that within the SIBME dashboard for the Continuity Project or just at principalcenter.com/faculty if you would prefer. All right, that is it for today. This has been episode 62 of the Instructional Leadership Show and part 3 of the Continuity Project on metaphor. I'm Justin Bader, and I will see you next time. Take care.